So for Parshas Ki Tovo, the opening parsha is the mitzvah of Bikurim. And that starts on Perek Chavav. And the first set of four psukim forms a unit and tells you exactly how to perform the mitzvah of Bikurim. And from Pasuk Hey and on, for a long unit of psukim that has about, I would say, seven or eight psukim to it, starting with Pasuk Hey and all the way to Pasuk Yud Aleph, there the Torah describes what's called the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim, which means the declaration, the recitation, which has to accompany the Mevi HaBikurim. So what I have for you today, I'm on a list, you can join the list too, of an email of an alon, you know, one of these Shabbos Divrei Torah collections, and this is called Tiv HaKihila. I just got it for the first time, and I was very excited about his piece on Mikra Bikurim, because that's my topic for today. And the author, his name is Rabbi Gamliel HaKohen Rabinovich. I can't tell you much about him. I'm going to hopefully find out more about him as I go along. And he's focused on the recitation. And he breaks down the recitation of Mikra Bikurim into two parts. He says that the second part, which makes a lot more sense, is an emphasis on the fact that God gave us the land. And Vayvienu El HaMokom HaZeh, that starts in Pasuk Tes, which you won't see here on your page, but it just speaks about the beauty and the splendor of the land of Israel. It's an Eretz Zov Aschol of Devash. And now the land has produced, and I'm bringing the first produce. That starts in Pasuk Tes. But the opening Resha of Mikra Bikurim, which is from Psukim Hey all the way until Ches, which is for Psukim, is kind of like a historical account in which we go back to the very beginnings of Jewish history, back in the time of Yaakov Avinu, and we speak about Arami Ovid Avi, which is a reference to Lavan, who's trying to destroy Yaakov, a reference to Mitzrayim, that the Jewish nation went down to Mitzrayim, there they were subjugated, and God took us out of Mitzrayim. And he says that even though today we don't have the mitzvah Bikurim because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, but perhaps based on our analysis of the Mikra Bikurim, the mitzvah Mikra Bikurim, we can derive some sort of very important message for ourselves even today. And this message is hidden in the parish of Mikra Bikurim. When I say hidden, what I mean to say is that we have a problem over here. Why is it that when I bring my Bikurim, I have to go back into history, I have to talk about Yaakov Avinu and his relationship with his adversary Lavan, his Shver, a very difficult father-in-law to get along with. We have to go back to Mitzrayim and the Shibud of Mitzrayim. It's a very nice historical account, but at the surface of it, it doesn't seem to be directly related to Mikra Bikurim. Why can't I just thank God for giving us the land? The land is full of produce, it's fertile, it's Zav Eschol V'Devash. Why go back into history? So he says the following, that there's a radical idea here, but very fundamental, and something that we have to take to our hearts even today and learn that lesson, despite the fact that we don't have technically the obligation and the ability to fulfill this mitzvah. He says the following, that it's one thing to acknowledge that, you know what, Hashem, you blessed me, you blessed my land, I don't take any credit for that, I myself couldn't have done it, even though I worked hard on my land, I plowed the land, I seeded the land, I harvested the land by the sweat of my brow. But all this, Hashem, is a result of you and not a result of me. I recognize, I acknowledge that it's not kochi v'otzem yadi, it's not my own power, but I needed your divine assistance. And by recognizing that, And bringing from the first fruits, that's a great mitzvah. I'm not an ingrate. We'll talk about this in Yirtzeh Hashem a little bit later, but I express my gratitude because I realize where this is all coming from. Now, we want to take it one step further. And we want to suggest that by going back into history, I'm really, in a sense, negating myself. What do I mean by negating myself? Instead of saying "Kochi v'otzem yadi," I'm involved in a humble and an expression of humility by going back into history. So let's just get the framework of the Tiv HaKehila. He wants to suggest that the first part of Mikra Bikurim, which is an exploration into the and a declaration regarding the origins of the Jewish people, that too fits into the framework of who am I and what am I taking credit for? Is it my ability and my greatness? Kochi v'otzem yadi. And he goes on to describe what he considers the fundamental attitude on which the entire Torah is built. What kind of a midah, of an attribute, should a person have? Obviously, he wants to recognize the greatness of Hashem, the fact that Hashem bestowed upon him all the goodness that he needs. But it goes beyond that. And he says that if a person wants to acknowledge why was it, how was it, that he was zocha, that he merited having great success, then he has to learn the following lesson. And the lesson is made up of two parts. And then we'll see what the source for this is. The first part is that success depends upon the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah has to be present in our lives. If we are in close proximity to the Shekhinah, then God will bring us Hatzlacha. And number two, how do we get the Shekhinah to be close to us? He says through a process of humility. Without humility, without anava, there's no possibility that Shekhinah is going to come and bestow its presence upon us. And in order to be matzliach, to be successful, we must have the Shekhinah. What's the source for all of this? He says it's the parasha of Yosef HaTzadik. If you open up to Bereishis Lamed Tes, Pasuk Beis, it says, Vayehi Hashem es Yosef, God surrounds Yosef. He intervenes and supports Yosef. Vayehi Ish Matzliach. The key word is Ish Matzliach. Yosef is successful in whatever he does. Whether he is thrown into a dungeon and there he's successful, and he goes higher and higher, whether he reaches the highest point as being the viceroy of Egypt, he is the Ish Matzliach. And why is the Ish Matzliach? Because Vayehi Hashem es Yosef. How do we get to that level? How can we expect to achieve that goal of being like Yosef and Ish Matzliach? I'm a farmer. I depend upon my agriculture, my produce, in order to be Matzliach. I have to bring myself to a state of Vayehi Hashem es Yosef, that God will be with me, and then I can be an Ish Matzliach. A person wants to be Zocher, then he needs Hashuas HaShechinah. But there's one condition. How does he achieve Hashuas HaShechinah? So Chazal tell us that a person has to imitate God. And that's the Chazal in Masechta Sota on Daf Hei Amud Aleph. And Rabosa, if you don't see it inside, just let me know if you want to see the text, because I'm not going through the text line by line. So you have to tell me if you want. You know, some people like to. I have a retired eye doctor who comes to my shiurim, and he doesn't take any text. He knows everything by heart. We have an ongoing joke about that. So again, you have to stop me and tell me, Rabbi, where are you up to in the text, if you're interested in seeing the text, and you don't find it. The Gemara in Sota says, Li'olam yilmad adam midas kono. A person must learn from Hashem, from God, from his Maker. And this takes us to the greatest moment in Jewish history, when God gives us the Torah at our Sinai. And what does Hashem do? Hashem comes down from the highest of the high, from the heavens above, and he decides with his humility, capital H, his humility, to rest his Shekhinah on the lowest of mountains, on Har Sinai. All this is to teach us humility. This is the lowest of mountains. God could have chose the Harmugvos, the great mountains. He could have chose, what's that mountain called in Switzerland? I'm blanking out now. You have to take a cable car up to the top of the mountain. Anyway, I forgot the name of it. In Alaska, there's a gigantic mountain called Mount Everest. Oh, I know what it's called in Switzerland. It's called... No, that's a different mountain. Okay. Anyway, so God left all these great mountains, and he rests his Shekhinah on Har Sinai, a very modest mountain. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sota, in the same sugya in the Agadah, to kol she'adam she'yesh bo gasas ruach, if a person attributes to himself greatness, I'm the one, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, he declares, ein ani v'hu yicholim lader ba'olam, I can't share the world with him. In other words, hashras ha'shechina, to bring the Shekhinah close down, that requires the midah of anava. The Gemara tells us that mi midbar matana, if a person makes himself into a midbar, shekol akol doshimbo, a wilderness everybody just stomps on it, it means he doesn't take any significance for himself, then Torah nitna lo b'matana, the pasuk says mi midbar matana, if a person is like a midbar, then he gets the Torah as a matana. And therefore, moving on to the left side, he says the following, that when the Mevi Bikurim declares that I'm going to go back to my roots and my grandfather, my great ancestor Yaakov Avinu, let's recognize the great goodness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God intervenes to save Yaakov Avinu from the adversary, from the schemer, from Lavan Harami. Lavan Harami is planning to take Yaakov out of the picture. He wants to get rid of him. And if not for divine intervention, then Yaakov would have been a loser. He would have been a goner. He would have just not been able to successfully do this. This feeling, this sense and recognition that I am lost without God, without divine help, is the essence of Anova. And this is what brings the Shekhinah and therefore Hatzlach. Take a look at the sad situation of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Mishubalim avodim ayinu lefar Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim could have done us under. Hashem had to change the natural law to intervene in a miraculous way in order to save the Jewish people. There's no way that we could say we are free people because kochi v'yotzim yadi asli yisachayel, said I was responsible for saving myself, for redeeming myself from the avdus of Mitzrayim. Anything that we have comes because of divine intervention, because of divine chesed. If we realize this, and if that lesson becomes part of our essence, and we repeat it and learn it over and over again, time and time again, that's going to bring us to Achna and Anova. And if we get to the state of Anova, of humility, realizing that we're totally dependent upon Hashem, then there'll be Ashras HaShechina. And if there'll be Ashras HaShechina, then there'll be Hatzlach. And here he has a beautiful insight into a Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Torah says here about Bikurim that the Bikurim, these fruits, have to be brought besamta batena. Tena is a receptacle, a basket. The question is, what happens to this basket after it's given over to the Kohen? Do you get it back? So the Gemara says that the rich people wanted it back, and it was understood that the Kohen would have to return it. Why? Because the rich people took kalsos, meaning baskets of zahav and kesef. They were made of gold and silver. However, the aniyim, in contrast, the poor people, brought it in sali nitzom shal arava klufa. We're learning that about the arava in the dalad min. The arava is the cheapest of all the four minim. It grows everywhere. And take a bunch of aravas, and this is what the aniyim had to do, they had no choice, and weave them together until you form a basket. What is that basket worth on the market? Virtually nothing. And therefore the Gemara says that the premise, the assumption is that when the Aniyim brought the Bikurim to the Kohen and they gave him this Sal Shel Aravos, they would not get the Sal back. the Kohanim would take it for themselves. The Gemara goes on and derives the conclusion from this Gemara. Rava turns to his Rebbe Rava and he asks him, what is this all about? And the answer is, Anius Choseres Achar Ha'oni, which if you translate literally, it means that once you're poor, poverty is going to track you down time after time and then. It's very difficult to extricate yourself from the state of Anius. That's the literal interpretation of the Gemara. But perhaps that interpretation leaves us wanting. Why should a person bring his sal and make this tremendous effort for the great mitzvah of Bikurim and end up with a message that's very depressing? We're not going to give you back the sal because Anius is Anius. You're a poor person, continue to be a poor person. That seems like a very depressing message, a real letdown for a person who did so much and put himself so far out for the mitzvah of Hashem, the mitzvah of Bikurim. However, perhaps, says Rabbi Gamliel, we can offer a different interpretation of what the Gemara means. You know why they didn't return the salim to the aniyim? Because this ani, this poor person, came to be mekayim the mitzvah. And he was forced within the context of the mitzvah by the obligation of this mitzvah of mikra bikurim to recognize all the chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not only with him, but with his forefathers. And as a result, when he realizes that man has nothing to claim for himself, that Yaakov Avinu is exposed to a tremendous danger, and if not for divine intervention, he's a lost soul. He will be completely wiped off. Ein lo sarid upolit. There would be no one who would survive. His entire nation, his entire people would be wiped off. So who is man, and what is man? When he declares that we were left to the hands, the mercy of Mitzrayim, if not for Hashem's intervention, so who are we? He reaches the state of anova and hachna, of being very humble. And at that point, he brings down the Shekhinah. And if he brings down the Shekhinah, because Shekhinah resides with an anov, with a person who's humble, because that's what God is. God is humble. God comes down from the heavens in order to rest His Shekhinah on Har Sinai, and He wants us to do the same. Then the ani, when he declares and recites the parsha of Arami Ovid Avi of Mikra Bikurim, he reaches that state of divine hashpa because he's an anov. And if that be the case, he really doesn't need this sal. He doesn't need to get back the sal. And there's a symbolic message here in the fact that the Kohen will not return the sal made up of these aravos to the ani. It's a remez, it's an allusion to him that next year he doesn't need this sal. He'll be bringing his bikurim like the ashirim with salim, with baskets that are made of kesef izah. And now, what does it mean when the Gemara says basar anya? It doesn't mean that again there'll be anius, the way we interpreted it, but rather basar anya means after this ani has suffered from poverty to such an extent that they didn't even have to return his sal because it was made of such a cheap substance, then azla aniusa. Azla aniusa doesn't mean that he goes back to the state of aniyus, but azla means to remove. Azil means when you remove something. And yistalik mimenu aniyus. Why is yistalik mimenu aniyus? Because since he reaches the experience of anova, he recognizes and acknowledges that he's nothing without Hashem. Hashem is there with him. The Shekhinah is sharan and anov. And if that be the case, the message of the Shekhinah is that you'll be matzliach. That if in the past you've suffered from financial difficulties and challenges, in the future, Hashem is going to make you into an ish matzliach. If Yosef HaTzadik is down like an ani, down and out, he's being thrown into the dungeons, being sold as an eved, nevertheless, he's going to become the great ish matzliach because he learns, he derives the das kono. He understands that everything comes from Hashem. Yosef is the epitome, the paradigm of anova, because he takes absolutely no credit for himself, always pointing his finger towards divine assistance. It's Elohim, it's God who gave me all the success. If I can interpret dreams, it's only because of God. That Anova brings the Shekhinah. And therefore the Pasuk says about Yosef, Vayehi Hashem es Yosef. The Shekhinah is there, Vayehi Ish Matzliach. And that's what we're telling the Ani. When he brings his Bikurim and he reaches the state of Anova, he becomes an Ish Matzliach. And therefore we tell him, you don't need this cheap Sal in return, because next year, Mitz Hashem, as an Ish Matzliach, you'll come like the Ashirim with the most beautiful receptacles when you bring Bikur. So this is the first thing that I want to derive from the Parasha of Mikra Bikur. And at this point, I would like you to take up a page that should say on it, Simcha, increase the bottom line. Do you see such a page? Maybe it didn't come out, but the first thing on the right side would say the Levush in Arachayim. Yes, no, maybe so. Did I give you the wrong page? And he just,
sure.
You have it. Okay, I just want to make sure you have it. Okay. If you take a look on the right side of your page, we're going to take a look at the second source, which is right here at the beginning of Parshas Kisavo, but it's not the mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim. This is the mitzvah of Biur Masros, which is the second major mitzvah in Parashas Kisavo. Here too, the Torah requires a recitation, which is called Vidui Masros, in the language of the Mishnah in Masechta Masros. And the Pasuk says, V'amarta lifnei Hashem Elokecha, you should declare it in front of God, V'arti HaKodesh Min Habayis. That's a phrase that relates to what's called Maaseh Sheni, which is brought on years 1, 2, 4, and 5. And at the end of those years, you have to be Mavair. You take out any Maaseh Sheni that hasn't been brought to Yerushalayim. You have to do what's called Bir Masros. And then it says, V'gam Nasativ L'Levi, that's a reference to Maaseh Rishon, which is brought on all 6 days. I'm sorry, 6 years of the Shemitah cycle, and it's given to the Levi. And then we have something called Maaser Ani, which replaces Maaser Sheni on the 3rd and 6th years. And that's called Lager Vele Yosef Al Almona. I have given it, as I am required to do, to the poor people. And Kechol Mitzvosecha Asher Tzivisani. I've basically been meticulously committed to fulfill all the mitzvahs that you have obliged me to fulfill. Lo Avarti Mi Mitzvosecha. Never once did I violate your mitzvah. And these are a whole bunch of mitzvahs. And he was very meticulous about fulfilling the mitzvah. He observed them to the T. And now he's proud to declare it. And then we have two words at the end. V'lo shachachti. These two words seem to be extra superfluous and a bit out of place. Almost anticlimactic. You've just declared that you were careful about all the mitzvahs. There are many serious mitzvahs and meticulous laws, nuances of laws, especially with regard to Maaseh Sheni, because Maaseh Sheni is Momen Gavah, it's really Kodesh. And now after exhausting all of the commitments and saying, I did everything I have to do, then you say, V'lo shachachti, I didn't forget. So Rashi says the following, that these words, V'lo shachachti, add another mitzvah into the equation in which the mitzvada is declaring I was even careful about that mitzvah, that extra mitzvah, that auxiliary mitzvah. I think, Michael, that's your favorite word, auxiliary. I learned it from you. Again, I might not be pronouncing it correctly, but... And Rashi says, Lo shachachti milavarechecha. I didn't forget the bracha. What is the bracha? Now, Rashi leaves out a few words. Asher kinshanu mitzvos v'tzivanu. Al hafroshes masros. Now, if you want to know why it's al hafroshes masros and not lahafresh masros, then you'll have to learn a sugya in Masechta Pesachim Adaf Zayin. And the Gemara basically, in a nutshell, again, it's very complicated, but the bottom line is that the Gemara says that any mitzvah that you could fulfill through a shliach, you make al. So the classical shlichus and the paradigm in case of shlichus is hafroshes trumas and masros. I can appoint you to be Mafresh Maaser on my behalf, and therefore the Nusach HaBroch is Al. However, this Rashi is almost impossible to understand. Because I'll ask you a simple question. The obligation to recite a bracha before every mitzvah, how would you classify it? Is it d'oraisa or is it d'rabbanan? Don't all answer at once.
Everyone except for two are mid-rabban.
Correct, they're all mid-rabban. The only two are Birkas HaMazon and
Torah.
And Birkas HaTorah. Now Birkas HaMazon is not related to us at all, because Rashi is talking about a Birkas HaMitzvah, Shai Kishon Mitzvot Sifonu Allah Froshes Masros. The only one that could possibly be related to us is Birkas HaTorah. But Birkas HaTorah is in a category of unto its own. Kishem Hashem Ekra Avgor Lelukenu. That's a din that Torah needs a bracha, and every day on a daily basis, I'm obligated to recite this bracha. That makes it very unique. But in a classical mitzvah, and I can give you a list of 248 of them, all right, we'll subtract one, 247, those are all drabbana. Those were brachos that were established by the Anshei Knesset Sagdola. And again, there's a great deal of analysis as to what the nusach ha-bracha should be in any particular mitzvah, but it's only drabbana. Now, why should that bother me? What kind of mitzvah is Rashi describing here? A derabbanan? He's talking about a doraisa. The mitzvah of havas, or bir masros, is a mitzvah doraisa. It's counted in the taryak. It's written here explicitly in the parasha, in Kisov. And if when he recites his obligatory recitation, he says, "V'lo shachachti milavarecha asher kitshanu mitzvot tzivonu ala froshes masros," that's very odd. The man is coming to fulfill a mitzvah d'oraisa, and he's telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "I didn't forget a chiyuv d'rabbanan." It just doesn't. It doesn't fit.
And he's saying he didn't forget what? Oh.
And he's saying, "Lo shachachti, I didn't forget to make the bracha." Where does that come into a mitzvah d'oraisa? I'm now fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa of bir masros together with the nusach of the kriya that the Torah explicitly formulates, and now I'm telling Hashem, I didn't even forget the bracha. What do you mean you didn't forget the bracha? The Torah is telling you not to forget the bracha. There is no bracha on a Torah level. It's all d'rabbanan. So the one who notices this is the Mizrahi. He's the super commentary on Rashi al Torah. Again, there are thousands of commentaries on Rashi al Torah, but primary, the number one, is called the Mizrahi, Rebbe Leo Mizrahi. And he says we make a big mistake. Rashi is not referring to the Nusach HaBrach. Rashi is referring to Levarech es Hashem. I'll read to you the language of the Mizrahi. It's number 5 on your page. He says, Pirish mil shabechacha mil levarechacha. I didn't forget to praise you, God. I didn't forget to bless you at the time of Afroshes Masros. Lo mi levarech bracha al Afroshes Masros. He's not talking, Rashi, about the bracha itself on the mitzvah of Afroshes Masros. He nusach ha-bracha she'tiknu ad she'kneses ha-gdola lomar al Afroshes Masros she'birchas kol ha-mitzvos eino elo mi-divreyem. And therefore he quotes a Sifri, which Rashi is re-paraphrasing here, this is the source of Rashi, and the Sifri has it a little bit different. It says, "Lo shachachti milvarechecha umilahazkir shimcha olav." I didn't forget to mention and enunciate your great name, God. This is a doraisa. Meaning, even before the Chazal, the Anshei Knesset Gedolah came along, and they established and enacted a requirement of a bracha with the nusach of a bracha, Asher Kishon Mitzvot Tzivonu, way before that, at the time of the doraisa, I'm coming to be Mafrish Maaser, and I have to declare to Hashem, God, you are great. God, you have bestowed upon me all the good. And I will bless you, God. I haven't forgotten to do that. Now, the Mizrahi lived approximately 6 centuries ago. But way, way before the Mizrahi was the Rimigash, one of the outstanding Rishonim of the Sephardic tradition. He was actually the Rebbe of the Rambam. I mean, you're talking about big stuff over here. And he has a different take on this Rashi. And it's a pella to me that the Mizrahi doesn't quote the Rimigash. The Rimigash is of the opinion that there is a bracha d'oraisa. Could you imagine? This is a radical change, because we're not talking about Berachas HaTorah, nor Berachas HaMazon. And which bracha is that? Shechiyanu v'kimanu v'yonu l'zman hazeh. And that bracha is d'oraisa whenever I encounter a mitzvah for the first time, or a mitzvah for the first time in a long time, I recite Shechiyanu. So for example, when I hear the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, I need to recite Shechiyanu. Says the Rimigash, that's a d'oraisa. In the case of lulav, the Shechiyanu is not d'oraisa because I recited the lulav, the bracha Shechiyanu, the night before over the sukkah and the lulav, and I cover both. So any Shechiyanu on the day of sukkahs, the first day of sukkahs of the lulav, that's only d'rabbana. But in the case of shofar, there was no possibility of reciting a Shechiyanu at night over a new mitzvah, because there is no mitzvah at the night of Rosh Hashanah. We only have the mitzvah with daybreak, and that's the mitzvah of shofar. That brach of Shechiyanu is d'oraisa.
Is there a mitzvah to shake the lulav at night?
No, but once we have a mitzvah sukkah, then the brach of Shechiyanu is chal on the entire day, meaning both for the mitzvah sukkah at night and for the mitzvah lulav during the day. Again, if we had a shir on the mitzvah of Shechiyanu, this would be...
But then the first Shechiyanu, anyway, at the night is
already here at
d'oraisa.
Correct. The first Shechiyanu at night is a mitzvah d'oraisa on both the sukkah and the lulav. Now, when I recite another Shechiyanu in the day over the lulav, I've already covered my d'oraisa, and that's the d'rabbanan. In the case of shofar, I don't have a Shechiyanu on any particular mitzvah at night, and therefore the Shechiyanu of the first occasion through the mitzvah, which is shofar in the day, is d'oraisa. A mind-boggling chiddush of the Rimigash. That's number 14. I'm sorry, if I had more time I would go through it line by line. I think I might have underlined, but I don't know if it came out in the photocopy. Certain lines. The Rimigash, sorry. I meant to say the Rimigash. If I didn't say that, I apologize. I'm just wondering if you see it. Did it come out in the photocopy? The bottom left of your first of this two-sided page. Dr. David, you see it or not? Nod your head if you see it. It should say Shut Rimigash, Simon Chav Gimel. Because once I know you saw that, and if you get a chance to study it in depth, if you're ever interested in the sugya of Shechiyanu, then once you finish that, we can fast forward to the Shem Mishmuel on Parshas Ki Tavo, which is number 24, and hopefully it came out on the flip side of your page. Do you see such a thing, number 24?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Have you heard of the Shem Mishmuel? Excellent. The Sokachov. And the Sokachov quotes his father. The Shem Mishmuel was the son. The father was the Avni Nezer, the Sokachov. And the Sokachov quotes in turn this tshuva of the Rimigash. Right here he quotes it in Parshas Ki Tavo. And he writes the following. Kavanas hadvarim, this is line 4 in note number 24. Ki ikar mitzvah hu hachius v'asimcha. What is the mitzvah that obligates me to recite Shechiyanu? And the answer is, it's the mitzvah of simcha. And what is that simcha? How do you define it? He says it's tshukas ha'odom le'mitzvah. Now, I don't know if I told you the story, I think I did, about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter on the first day of Sukkot, where he had his esrog in a glass container. Do you remember this? So he stayed up all night waiting for daybreak in order to take the esrog. Just he was so anxious when he saw the sun came out, that he grabbed for the esrog and he ripped his hand off. He didn't remember that it was in a glass container. That's called the tshuka for a mitzvah. It should drive you crazy. you lose your marbles because you're just craving for the mitzvah. More than anything that I want to do this mitzvah. Shechiyanu v'kimanu v'yanu l'zman hazeh. I finally got to that time, the opportunity to do this mitzvah.
Now when you see it, Osa Bas Chalai, you will be able to walk over you when you go side to the
I just mind you that Lashon Hara now went on the tape. I'm sorry. But let's not talk about the Chassidim. You know, let's say that, you know, I should be anxious to do a mitzvah, but I don't want to stand on your head, you know what I'm saying? But what is the Sakhan Shavuot telling me based on the Rimigash? He's saying that there's a mitzvah of Simcha. Why? What is Simcha? When do I feel joy? Joy is when I have a craving, a desire, a tshuka, and it's fulfilled. And that happens when a rare mitzvah comes my way. I wait for this mitzvah. Have you ever seen, here in Eretz Yisrael, a father recite Shechiyanu over the bris milah of his son? If he doesn't break down crying, feltepis, you know. Maybe he's a kaltalitvah. But if he has any emotion, when he gets to Shechiyanu, he'll probably start crying. And I just saw it about 6 weeks ago at the bris of our grandson, Ben Zion Berthon, how his father just broke down at the bruch of Shechiyanu. What does it mean for a father? He waited 14 years for a son. He had a couple of girls in the middle, but he wanted a son. And he had a bracha from a great rabbi, I don't want to go into it now, and he had Baruch Hashem, his wife gave birth to his son. Shechiyanu v'kimanu, I have the opportunity to bring my son into the Brisa Shel Avraham Avinu. I'm excited about that. It's the epitome of tshuka. It is simcha. And on that simcha, I have to make a bracha. And he says, the Sakhan Shavuot, that's what defines the essence of the Jewish people. You know, we call ourselves the chosen people. Be honest about it. What makes us different than any other nation? And the Sakhan Shavuot has a very unique answer. You can get 50,000 answers to this question, but you'll never get the Sakhan Shavuot's answer. The answer is that our feeling for mitzvahs is a tshuka for a mitzvah. You know, most people use the word tshuka for other things in other contexts. You know, you have a tshuka for ice cream, you have a tshuka for a good piece of steak. Soccer. Our tshuka, what?
Soccer bench. Or
I can't hear you, what?
Soccer bench.
I don't know
football,
what that means.
Football.
Oh, soccer. Yeah, I know a person, and maybe you know him too. He'll travel all the way to England, you know, and in order to see the Wilmington Tennis Championship, you know. That's called a tshuka for tennis. And tennis is a great sport, don't get me wrong. But that doesn't define the Jewish people. I'm sure there were plenty of goyim who went to Wilmington. How do you pronounce it?
Wimbledon.
But what defines a Jew is an amazing tshuka for a mitzvah. And that, he says, is the essence of Simcha. And he goes on to tell us that that's what Bilham, again, of all people, we get it from Bilham, describes the essence of the Jewish people. Hein am kilavi yakum. Like a lioness, they wake up. They jump out. Ka'ari, like a lion, yisnase. Says Rashi, omdim yisheinasam, they get up from their bed. They jump out of bed. In Yiddish we say, stay off, lavodas amorei, shachris, v'chotfin es ha-mitzvah. A lot of people want to stay under the quilt. You know, it's cold outside. They say about the Chofetz Chaim that he was in his deep 90s. And they overheard him screaming at the Yetzer Hara because the Yetzer Hara said, go back to bed, you're an old man. It's cold outside. And he fought against the Yetzer Hara even at that age. Because Am Kilavi Yakum, we are chotfin as a mitzvah. We grab the opportunity to do mitzvahs. Why? Because moral godel ishtokikus le mitzvah. We are incomplete without the mitzvah. We wait for the mitzvah. We anticipate the mitzvah. And that doesn't exist, he says, amongst the Umos HaOlam. It's only Rak Eitzel Yisrael, Shapnimius Shalahem, in their very essence, they desire the mitzvahs. And that's why Bilam said, this is what I see. I want to describe to you the Mila of Klal Yisrael. And their Mila is the Simcha, the joy that they have when they get an opportunity to do a mitzvah. And therefore the Rimigash says that you have to make a bracha on that Simcha. And what is the bracha that expresses your great Simcha, your tshuka for a mitzvah? Shechiyanu v'kimanu. I waited for this opportunity to do the mitzvah. And a Jew will blow the shofar in the Holocaust, in the camps, with a stolen shofar that was hidden in a coffee cauldron, at the pain of death because he has a tshuka for the mitzvah.
You're not supposed to do that.
It could be that in Shas Hashmad, all the halachas change. If the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, say that if you fulfill a mitzvah, we're going to shoot you on the spot, shoot you down like a dirty dog, it could be that it comes under the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. And if we have anything from the Holocaust that we took as a lesson, again, you might not see this in Yad Vashem, but you know, but we know what Yad Vashem really should be like. And now, by the way, they're changing their philosophy in Yad Vashem. It's a whole new Marechet Rav Lau, the former chief rabbi, got very involved in Yad Vashem. He's now on the presidential committee or whatever it is. They now have recordings from Frum Jews, you know, interviews that you'll see on the video screen of Jews who will tell you how Jews put their life on the line for a mitzvah. They would save their rations of margarine months in advance to have oil for Ner Chanukah. And if the Nazis found you lighting Ner Chanukah, you were dead on the spot. This is the tshuka of Klal Yisrael for a mitzvah. And there's a famous story about the Blue Shiva Rebbe that he hesitated to say the third bracha on the first night of Chanukah in the camps. And then he looked around at the faces of the Jews who had come from all the bunkers, each one putting his life on the line, and he said, this is the people, this is the nation that I want to be part of. This is the great courage and the heroism of the Holocaust. And we can talk about this throughout Jewish history, the tremendous suffering that the Jew would put himself into just to get the opportunity for a mitzvah. And therefore, Baruch Hashem, we have all the opportunities surrounding us. We don't have to put our lives in danger. Do we appreciate the mitzvah? Do we have the simcha? And the source for this is Parshas Ki Tova. Because in Parshas Ki Tova, and you'll take a look on page 1, if you flip back to the first side, number 12, the curses, the tochacha, open up with the statement, Tachas Eshalo Avadatos Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha U'B'Tuv Levav. What you're missing is simcha. And Rabbeinu Bachai, again, if you flip over to number 16, here in Parshas Ki Tova, establishes that the reward for the mitzvah reaches level X, we'll call it, but the reward for the simcha of the mitzvah is no less than the reward for the mitzvah itself. And the Tzam Sofer takes this a step further, number 18, and the Tzam Sofer says that the schar for a person, the reward for the simcha of the mitzvah, supersedes, exceeds beyond the reward for the mitzvah itself. So if the mitzvah deserves a bracha, then how much more so should the simcha of the mitzvah deserve a bracha? And the chiddush here, the amazing chiddush, says the Sakhat Shavra of the Rimi Gash, who lived hundreds of years before the Mizrahi, is that bracha is a bracha d'oraisa, because if we express our gratitude to Hashem because He gave us the opportunity to do a mitzvah, that's a kiyum of d'oraisa. That's called v'lo shachachti. I didn't forget to thank you, Hashem, for the opportunity to be mafresh trumas and maestras, for the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. And this, my friends, I think is the second great lesson that's inherent in Parshas Ki Tova. The first, as we said before, is the anova, is the humility that brings down the shechina, that makes a person into an ish matzliach. The ani of Yirtzeh Hashem next year will not need any handouts to take silver and make himself a silver receptacle. The second message is the message of simcha v'lo shachachti, that I didn't forget to thank you, Hashem, because you brought me to the state of simcha. You brought me to the state of an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. And I spoke here on Shabbos before Mincha, and I said, it was my own chiddush, that when we say Avinu Malkeinu Kosveinu v'Sefer Zechuyos, it doesn't mean that we ask God to write us down in the Sefer Zechuyos. We have Zechuyos, and if we don't have Zechuyos, He's not going to write us down in those Zechuyos. But it means Sefer Zechuyos is the schus to do a mitzvah. We're asking Hashem to remember us and inscribe us in the book that we should have an opportunity to do mitzvahs. And that's because what defines the Jewish nation is their tshuka for mitzvahs. We have a desire for mitzvahs. We're incomplete without a mitzvah. And says the Chidah, you know, he was the great Sephardic rabbi who lived two and a half centuries ago, and this you'll see in number 23, that Simcha is Rashi Tevis, Simcha's mitzvah chiyuvu, that we're obligated in the mitzvah of Simcha, not just in the Maisa mitzvah. He says that Simcha is not just a heder mitzvah, it's not an embellishment, but it's an absolute requirement in and of itself. And many of the commentaries ask, what is the very first mitzvah that a bar mitzvah boy implements when he becomes bar mitzvah? And the Chasam Sofer has a very unique, radical answer to that question. Some say it's Kriyas Shema Shel Arvis, because B'shol Bucha says the Chasam Sofer name. He has a different take on it. This is number 22. Do you see it? This is in the Chasam Sofer in his Pirush on Parshas Vayechi. And he says the following, that when he enters into bar mitzvah, the first mitzvah that he has is sason v'simcha, is to be happy, is to be rejoiced. Why? Because he has the opportunity to recover all Malchus Shema. Forget about Kriyat Shema, we're not up to Kriyat Shema. But the second before he recites Kriyat Shema, at that split second, he's mekayim his first mitzvah, and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what I waited for, this is my tshuka, this is my essence. Until now I was doing it perfunctorily as a matter of chinuch. It was training, it was exercise, it was preparation, but now I have the opportunity to fulfill all your mitzvahs, Hashem. That simcha is a mitzvah, Hashem. It's a separate mitzvah, and that's avodas Hashem b'simcha. That's a mitzvah unto itself. He wrote something, it be his will, that we should be zochah to these great mitzvahs that are derived from Parshas Kisavu, the mitzvah of anava that would make us a mirtz Hashem into an ish matzliach, to realize that everything we have is from Hashem, I can't take any credit for myself, and the mitzvah of simcha, keni yiratzon.
Not
always. Only on the first occasion to do a mitzvah. There are many, like if I buy a new suit, or I wear a new suit, that's complicated. But I make a shefiyot, that's a derabon. Or for example, on a yontif, which is called Kedushas Hazman, that's all derabon. But a deraisa, according to the Rimi Gash, again, it's a revolutionary. If you told this over to any of the fellows in Abbe's Mesh, they'll laugh you out of the place until you show them the Rimi Gash inside with the sukkah chum. Because no one in their right mind, and that's what the Mizrahi was yelling and screaming about, would say that a brach is deraisa, and you could put it into the parasha of a shachach, lo shachachti. I just want you to appreciate the revolutionary nature of this chiddush. You know, I love chidushim. That's what I live for. Everybody has their own, the only air to breathe. You know, reading a Gemara and just translating it, that's wonderful, but that doesn't do it for me. What does it for me is when I see a new pshat, a new insight, because Torah is absolutely endless. It's layer after layer. And my Talmidim in Mavaseret, where I used to be a Rosh Hashiva, they used to call it the Burzon Lomdisha dance, because they knew in the middle of Shia, if I started dancing, meaning I got up from my seat, they knew they were waiting for a big Chiddush. Because when I hear a Chiddush in Torah, I push and dance on it. When I was 14 years old, my first Rebbe was Rabbi Michael Hecht Shlita, a very unique personality. So he was once talking to his good buddy, that's my brother who's 11 years older than me, and he said to Hananya, my brother Hananya, he said to me, he says, your brother Azariah enjoys a good shtickle Torah, a chiddush, and he enjoys it so much that he could make a birchas hanenim on a shtickle Torah. That was the greatest compliment I could ever get in my life when I was 14. Anyway, this is our hope and our prayer, that we take the message of Parshas Kisavo to heart and we live up to this ideal. And Hashem should bless us with that siyata d'shmaya to achieve that goal. And then Emir Hashem will have the mitzvah bikurim be reinstated pshuto kimashmo, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt from here.